On Wednesday of this week, we are slated to hear from Donna Britt. Last week, she was diagnosed with ALS, and George Sells, her longtime anchor partner, is with us today to talk about Donna and a few other matters. But George provided me with these words to start, and I'll read some of them. On Tuesday of last week, Donna observed her 59th birthday. Thursday, she and the television station released the news that her neuropathy was not MS, but instead Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. It is the worst of the muscle-destroying diseases, and according to the ALS Association, the mean survival time is 3 years. Donna started noticing problems 9 months ago. When George was in the office about a month and a half ago, she was using a walker. Now she's in a wheelchair. She's lost use of all but the middle fingers of both hands. Her legs below the knee are impaired. So far, the disease has not struck her diaphragm, and thus her breathing and voice are unaffected. She has no facial tics, no malformation of any kind on her face, so she continues to work and says she will continue to do so until the disease knocks her out of the box. And George Sells, a grand lady, and she is fighting this with everything she has, and that comes as no surprise, does it?
She, I talked to her last night about her wheelchair. She's bragging about her wheelchair, a 400-pound monstrosity, and she told me that it goes 6 miles an hour. Well, you know, the best-known ALS patient is Stephen Hawking, and when he fought a wheelchair for about 9 years, and when he got it, he became a danger with it, and she brags 6-mile-an-hour wheelchair, but she also told me that it has a Bluetooth on it, and I couldn't imagine what in the hell she wanted Bluetooth for. Well, it turns out she's preparing for the future when they piece together speech for her. The LSU Speech Laboratory is going to, as she hopes, to piece together about 1,000 phrases from her own voice so that she can speak, something they did with Hawking. He had an American accented voice, which he could trigger with, eventually, only with his cheek and his eyebrow. But the one thing that I wanted to, that got such reaction, I wanted to read this one item I sent to some close friends and relatives. My relatives would come up here and meet her, and they were just taken aback by her right away. And I sent this to a guy who's also a columnist in New York, a national columnist, who's going to run part of this story about Donna tomorrow in his column. But if you can give me 38 seconds, is it? Did I say? I've forgotten what I said. But being a married guy, I always used to say she was the second most important woman in my life, and she really was. For some reason, there was an unknown chemistry between the two of us that had consultants using our tapes to teach so-called tandem anchoring in markets much, much bigger than Baton Rouge. In the halcyon television days of the late 90s and early 2000s, our audience levels on the late news were as high as 4 times the size of all the other stations combined. I was given too much personal credit for that. It was the pairing of Donna and George and the Raycom-created team around us that produced the almost implausible Nielsen ratings. This is not an obituary for the woman who was recruited to the LSU band as an oboe player and flag girl, so sought after that she stood in line to pick up her scholarship with athletic director Paul Dietzel's then all-male collection of prize student athletes. Long may her flag wave over WAFB for many years to come. And I signed it George Sells, Donna's co-anchor, 1988 to 2012.
Well, before we go to the phone lines and we invite your participation, I know Donna has touched many people in this community, not just the two people on the radio right now. And if you'd like to join us, 877-217-5757. Let's hear from Donna last week when she made her announcement.
Well, hi. 3 days of testing in Houston, Texas, 6 doctors, 12 tests shows that I have ALS. And so that means that I have to be careful about hugging people anymore because I have a very suppressed immune system. In fact, my immune system is attacking my nerves. But anyway, it means that I'm no different today than I was Friday before I had the diagnosis, right? Nothing has really changed knowing that I have ALS. It's just that now I can watch because my doctor, Dr. Cheryl Schroff, says that the length that you're going to live depends on how well you respond to each new loss that you have. Okay? So if I am able to overcome loss of this or that or this or that, they could say that I could live. They have some people that have lived 15 years with ALS. They've had some that only lived the year. Now I know, see, I asked them with great urgency, could you tell me how long I'm going to live? And they said, no, we can't. It's individual to the person. And so because of the first 9 months, I've lost legs, I've lost part of my arms, I've lost 8 out of 10 fingers, I've lost muscles in my back. You know, it's like, what will the next 9 months hold? They have no way of predicting, because the human body is like that. In fact, in this whole odyssey that I've had, where we've tried to search and do other things here in Baton Rouge, you realize that neurology and polyneuropathy is something that is sort of hazy, because it could be multiple sclerosis, it could be Guillain-Barré. You have written me, you have told me about how many similarities that your loved one or your own symptoms were to mine, and yet it has a different name today. I'm there with Team Gleason and Stephen Hawking. Now, I hope that I can deal with it as well as Stephen Hawking has, because he's lived for 50 years. But what I am going to do is be very careful. Like in the test that I had in Houston, I had super duper lungs. You know, this, you may have taken the breath test where you have to work it in inside your lips and make sure you get a good seal and then blow, dig as deep of a breath as you can take and then blow as hard as you can, and it moves the peg and they record it, you know, and then they have you suck in the same way. Well, they had me do that sitting up and lying down. When I did it sitting up, I had the old oboe player's lungs. A good was around 80. I did 190. I mean, it was really strong lungs. The problem is that the bow on the violin that is your lungs, the diaphragm that pulls the air into it, when I laid down, my colon, my lower GI kind of organs crowd the diaphragm. And I'm actually waking up 4 and 5 times a night, not knowing why, and it's because I can't breathe. My body wakes me up. And so the doctor, Dr. Holland, who's under 5 feet tall and is a fireball, she says, you know, get you one of those wedges for the bed, which I'm going to get. This all happened yesterday, okay? So I'm going to get a wedge for the bed, hopefully sleep better by keeping my internal organs from crowding what is a partially paralyzed diaphragm. Now, that may be the challenge that comes to me, is surviving if I can keep breathing. And so what I plan to do is, while I have the elocution that I have had for 36 years delivering news, the brain is not affected, you know. And so while I still have all of that, I want to continue working, being here with my friends, you know, just feeling the community that is the newsroom. And then if I get to a point where I need to be on a breathing machine or something like that, then we'll have to revisit this Donna goes to work every day thing. But for the time being, I am living as a living person and not as a dying person, okay? ALS is something you live with, and I plan to for years to come. I've got a kid who's got 2 more years of high school, and then we'll get married. I haven't seen grandchildren yet. They bought a dog up there in Rhode Island where Annie is. I may not see a grandchild for a while. But anyway, I wanted to let you know, if you have any questions about ALS, I could try and help. I've gotten this huge education in the 3 days I've been over there. I've got tons of stuff to read. But one thing that's really cool for people that are having problems with talking right now is that LSU is part of a beta test of a voice bank that allows you to put 1,000 phrases in your own voice into one of those speaking machines like Stephen Hawking has. So it doesn't sound like...
Based on what I know, and I think I know enough, she's a great individual.
She is, and she does everything so well. It's outrageous. She is a musician. A lot of people don't know this. She doesn't talk about it on the air. But she does a lot of stuff for LPB, and I used to watch her sitting after the 10 o'clock news. She would sit at her desk long after the newscast was over, and she was writing something. Mm-hmm. And I would look over, and it was a music sheet. And she's writing from her head music for a program on LPB. You know, no piano to sound the notes, no little sounder on her tone sounder. From her mind, she has perfect pitch, or the closest thing to perfect pitch. Not relative pitch, perfect pitch. That's just one thing she has. I mean, I can go on. She's read everything. She and her husband are both brilliant. Her husband is with the Advocate.
Mark Ballard.
Mark Ballard. He has a master's degree in journalism from Columbia University in New York, has been offered heavyweight jobs with the New York Times Washington Bureau a couple of times. But he stays here probably because of the money that Donna makes. But, I mean, that pair...
You cut right to the chase, Jordan.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that pair, they're unbelievable. Their daughter, Annie, is now a DNA scientist in I believe, Rhode Island. Her son is now at Episcopal
Lou.
High School.
Lou.
Yeah, Louie. They call him Louie. His name is Lou. It's just, you walk into that house and you just are overwhelmed with the intellect in there. You feel.
Well, speaking of Lou, she has Lou Gehrig's disease, and she will be the most eloquent spokesman probably for this since Lou Gehrig. And we remember his memorable 4th of July speech when he announced to the world that just 1 year removed from being one of the greatest players in the history of the game, he was fighting for his life.
First baseman Lou Gehrig hung up an amazing mark by playing in 2,130 consecutive games. Then a fatal disease attacked baseball's Iron Man. In Yankee Stadium, touched to tears by the tribute, Gehrig made his last public appearance.
For the past 2 weeks, you've been reading about a bad break. Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. When you look around, wouldn't you consider it a privilege to associate yourself with such a fine-looking man as is standing in uniform in this ballpark today?
That was Lou Gehrig, and Donna will fight it the same way the Iron Horse did.
She never gives up. I'll tell you what, one of the things, if I got a moment here, one of the things she did for the first 2 or 3 years I was here was she carried me. I came here from Detroit, and prior to that, Denver, Houston, New York, Philadelphia. I'm a Tennessee native, but the god-awful pronunciations that I had to face here in Louisiana, she would look ahead and see them coming, and she would always let me know ahead of time what I was about to face, and she'd set me up to get them right. Also, a jokester at the television station, Vernon Roget, he ran an April Fool's piece on these huge new shrimp, crawfish that had been discovered, and he was doing a story on shrimp. She didn't know what the joke was, but she said, "Watch it." And as it played, she warned me. She said, "These are shrimp." But I would have come out dumb. Oh, wow, isn't that something else? She always carried me when I was really in trouble.
All right, that brings us to question sent to talk at talklouisiana.org from Joshua about the chemistry between the two of you. Do you manufacture that, or was it just a natural flow between the two of you?
That's what was so unbelievable about it, and that's why the consultants would take our tapes and play them in other markets. Mm-hmm. It was not manufactured. It just sort of happened, and we don't know why, but I think it probably has something to do with the fact that I was 15 years older. There never was any romantic or a chemical reaction in that regard.
Sometimes that happens.
Sometimes it happens, but it didn't in this case. But I can tell you this, with no hesitation, I had worked with co-anchors in Philly and all these big markets, women who were very talented, fine newswomen for the most part. There were a couple of airheads. But the best anchor woman I ever worked with was in the 92nd market in Louisiana, Donna Ballard Britt, or Britt Ballard, Donna Britt Ballard. Yeah. It was incredible.
Yeah. And unlike a lot of news people, I think you and Donna wrote every word in your newscast, didn't you?
Almost. Back in the early days, as things moved along and production values became more pressure-ridden with all sorts of video, we couldn't physically do it. And we also had the problem with she was a dad burn woman and had to go home because she had children. And there was a time when we feared that she was going to have to come off the late news because of her children. But they asked me if I was willing to work a little harder so she could have hour and a half lunch hours or supper hours or whatever it was. I don't even remember the time. I said, my God, of course let her go.
Well, when you work for somebody as long as you did with her, 1988 through 2012, you associate all those events that you covered and reported on through those years with that individual, don't you? Think of all that happened in our world and in our community in those 24 years.
Yeah. And I do remember we were really well prepared for elections, so that was always pretty easy. We had this note system we put together that made us sound like we knew every candidate very well. But the biggest test, obviously, was Katrina. And everybody kept a stiff upper lip, but I only saw Donna cry because of something on the air one time. And that was after we'd gone eight, nine straight days, and our coverage finally ended one night about 11 o'clock, and we were all very, very tired. And, you know, after what everybody else had gone through, what we had gone through was nothing. Mm-hmm. But we had looked at all this misery, and she burst into tears and said, I wish this hadn't happened. A simple statement, but the emotion that poured out after 8 or 9 days on the air live, that's the only time I ever saw her cry.
But you, 9/11, I mean, national and local, international events, presidential elections, go down the list. Starting in 1988, when you first began on the air with her, Ronald Reagan was president, and by the time you left, it was Barack Obama. That's a lot of history.
Yeah. Well, I can remember the election when George Bush was running, and the question was, is it going to be Gore or is it going to be Bush? And I was in the newsroom writing something, and she bellows, and she can bellow. Boy, does that woman, I believe her when she can do 2.5 times the air level from her lungs. She bellowed, George, Florida has just come in. And she was in the studio, and I was in the newsroom probably 50 feet away, and I heard her, and she thought that Florida had the votes, and I think Gore was being called by CBS. Turns out that CBS was wrong.
Actually, the first one to call Florida for Gore was none other than Fox News.
Really?
Yeah. And they were wrong. But George Sells, President Trump, has had one wild ride in his 6 months and 11 days in office. What do you think?
I at first thought, my God, this is just incredible. This guy is in deep, deep trouble. And then I looked at CNN's The 90s, its series The 90s, and it turns out that Bill Clinton had similar problems, staff problems. One of his cabinet secretaries was caught using illegal foreign labor. in her home.
Well, it was one of his appointees. It didn't work out, but
yeah.
Was,
but I mean, there were just all
two,
sorts.
Two candidates for attorney general.
He got in trouble, of course, with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky. That was in his second term, but it was just a mess. Nixon. I was in at ABC News when Nixon got in trouble over Watergate, and this guy who had brought off such major triumphs, the connection with China, ending the Vietnam War, albeit by just god-awful bombing of Hanoi with no regard for civilians, and other things that he did that were respected by everyone, his administration got into trouble because he misjudged the special prosecutor. He thought that Leon Jaworski would be a good old boy and ease up when Nixon fired Archibald Cox.
Yeah, he fired Archibald Cox, the Saturday Night Massacre, got Robert Bork to do it for him, October 13th, 1973.
I was working.
You were a young lad of 31 then, George Sells. Where were you?
I was at ABC in New York, and I remember it well. It was the Saturday Night Massacre, and I had, being a young guy, I was given the night shift at ABC Radio at that time. And Lordy, I remember it well, because Nixon made the same mistake that Trump has made here. He misjudged the special, they didn't call it prosecutor at the time.
Special counsel.
Special counsel. And the
that's what it is now, too.
Yeah, it's a special counsel. But Alexander Haig called Leon Jaworski and asked him if he would become the special counsel. Well, Nixon and Haig thought that Jaworski would be just perfect. Good old boy from Texas. He had defended Lyndon Johnson in his 1948 very close senatorial race, in which he became known as Landslide Lyndon. Mm-hmm. And essentially, he stole the Senate race in 1948, and Jaworski had defended Lyndon. Jaworski was very close to John Connally, who was close to Nixon, so they thought they were safe.
But ultimately, Nixon resigned 8 months later.
Because Jaworski would not let up.
10 months later. And President Trump is under investigation now, and we don't know where this is going.
No. And it turns out to be one singular point. Will the special counsel have the right to subpoena records of the president? And Jaworski went before the Supreme Court with a subpoena and said, I want those White House tapes. And Nixon wouldn't give them up. So it's going to boil down to you're going to have the special prosecutor this time going to the Supreme Court and asking for Trump's business records or whatever.
Tax returns.
Whatever. And Jaworski won with a unanimous decision of the Supreme Court. Unanimous.
But what happens if the president, and this is all hypothetical, but what if the president were to fire the special counsel, get his attorney general to do so? And at this point, Jefferson Sessions is recused, so it would have to be the assistant attorney general. There's talk that he wants Sessions out because that would give the president some maneuverability if he had a attorney general in office who was sympathetic to the cause.
Yeah.
But that's all conjecture.
And that is also the problem. That question never was tested when Nixon fired Archibald Cox. And Nixon actually had his attorney general. Mm-hmm. And the attorney general fired Archie Cox.
But to put this in a Louisiana perspective, the president remains popular in our state, and he did win here in our state by almost 400,000 votes. And that was evidenced last week because even of those most draconian bills to repeal Obamacare, the ones that only got 43 and 45 votes, Bill Cassidy was with the president every step of the way. He voted for every one of them, the Ted Cruz bill, the Rand Paul bill, and ultimately the one that almost got through, the skinny bill. But he backed the president all the way, and as a Republican, that should really not be a big surprise, should it, that Bill Cassidy is 100% in the corner of Donald Trump?
No, he's conservative, he's a Southerner, he represents Louisiana, but he could get in trouble with that. I mean, I will never, ever forget that Bobby Jindal, who knows better, took these very, very, very conservative stands on Medicaid money from the federal government simply because he wanted to run for president and be on the conservative side. That's not Bobby Jindal in his heart. That was Bobby Jindal because he wanted to run for president.
Well, and he didn't get any delegates, so he ultimately is in retirement at 46. So I think he's on one board living in our community, George. But here's a man who's brilliant, Governor Jindal, who has 8 years experience as our governor, was a U.S. congressman, former health secretary, former head of higher education in Louisiana. And right now he's, for all intents, unemployable.
Exactly. And our state's in terrible condition, and part of it is his fault, in my belief.
But, George Sells is here with us, and there have been a few inquiries online. And going back to the Donna Britt discussion, which we began with, George, most people, as a listener notes, Scott, would have hung it up immediately. But that's not in her DNA as far as just quitting after this diagnosis.
Oh, good God, no. No. That's why we find her with the Bluetooth. The Bluetooth on her wheelchair. I asked her last night on the phone if there was anything that she didn't want me to talk about. She, of course, said, no, we've got nothing to hide. What in the hell is the Bluetooth for? She didn't really spell it out this way, but the Bluetooth is for her to get ready for the next phase when she cannot form words. She'll do like Stephen Hawking did. And Stephen Hawking, to this day, he's my age. He was born in 1942. He first got the disease when he was getting out of Oxford at age 22. And he now is able to, with his cheek, to form words by just touching a gadget. And Donna will be able to do that through this amazing program, she hopes, at the LSU Speech Lab. She will use her own voice. Hawking, believe it or not, had an American voice, and he preferred the American voice because he'd learned to live with it.
Quivona on Airline. Good morning, Quivona. You're on with George Sells.
Good morning. I was just calling. I wanted to say how disappointed I really am in Louisiana. First of all, I'm a huge liberal and Democrat, and to see my state so closely aligned with Donald Trump, it just really, you know, amazes me, the dissonance here. But I also wanted to say that a lot of people expected Bill Cassidy to vote a certain way according to the Hippocratic Oath of being a doctor. But I had to keep, you know, telling them he's a Republican, he's going to vote party line, and he's going to vote to try and keep repealing Obamacare, to keep taking away health care from people who can't afford it, just to vote down the party line. So I already expected Kennedy to vote that way, but I had a little hope in Bill Cassidy, but, you know, it all came down to, you know, how he was going to vote straight down party line with Donald Trump. And for him to still be very popular in our state, you know, it just really, really disheartens me that.
All right. We're going to get Georgia to respond, but Bill Cassidy had said that any bill that he supported would have to pass the Jimmy Kimmel test, and obviously a few of those bills did not.
What in the hell is the Jimmy Kimmel test?
Well, that you wouldn't be refused medical treatment at any time in an emergency, but a couple of those bills, based on most analysis, didn't pass the Jimmy Kimmel test. But Bill Cassidy is a politician, and
exactly.
Apparently a very good one. He's never lost an election. And he switched parties. He was a Democrat not so long ago, and then he became a Republican. He's been elected successively to the state Senate, to Congress, and now to the United States Senate. So,
and John Kennedy was also a Democrat.
He was, too, and we're in a Republican state now. If you want to win statewide office in Louisiana, unless you're the governor who managed to win without being a Republican, all the other positions are held by the GOP, George.
Yeah. And the governor was clearly a superior candidate in that campaign, you know, a former, Special Forces, Green Beret or whatever.
Well, and he had a wounded candidate on the other side. If he had been
yeah.
running against
oh, yeah.
a generic Republican, it would have been a different race.
Yeah.
George Sells, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for sharing your stories about the great Donna Britt, who is slated to be with us on Wednesday.